Welcome to the July 7th, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. A few announcements. If you have electronic devices, please silence them. That includes legislators. Just so there's no misunderstanding, the last meeting we had quite a debate and quite a lot of public comment on the issue of the old library. That is not on the agenda for tonight. There will be, as I said at the last meeting, it was taken back to committee. There will be a committee meeting on Friday of this week at 9 o'clock here in these chambers. Now, someone could move to reconsider. No one has told me they plan to do that, so I can't rule that out. It's a proper procedure. But it's my hope that we will go through the committee process as we talked about. And people want to speak about it, they certainly can tonight on privilege of the floor. But I wanted to make that clear. First things we have tonight are two public hearings. The first of those is a public hearing on the Ag and Farmland Protection Plan. And I wondered if there's anyone here tonight who would like to speak to that. I have two blue cards at least. And I'm going to turn to Monica Roth. Monica, do you want to you want to sit up there?
Oh, I can just speak here.
Speak from there?
I have to stick with my 3 minutes. So.
Well, you're entitled to more than 3 minutes on a public hearing.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But 3 minutes would be nice if we could try to
okay,
keep it short.
All right. Well, you heard my presentation about a month ago that kind of captured the summary of what is in the plan, which is on the county website for the public that's interested in learning more about it. I am both on the Ag and Farmland Protection Board and work for Cooperative Extension as the Ag Program Leader, and we've been giving a lot of support to development of the plan. And so we're here, I'm here, supporting the document and hope that we're speaking in support of the document. It's been developed for about a year and a half almost with guidance from the County Ag and Farmland Protection Board. And we've had during the past year and a half at least 5 farmer meetings, public meetings, where farmers and rural landowners have attended. And then in addition, we held focus group meetings for 8 different sectors of agriculture, including local foods and dairy and horticulture, horses, and a few others, livestock, all those that are out there. And so the purpose of the plan has really been to update the county ag plan, which the legislature adopted in 1998. So you can imagine that's got some old information in it, older strategies that are really no longer relevant. So we've been looking at the trends and issues that have occurred over the last 15 years, and we have identified lots of strategies based on the farmer input that we got that we hope to move forward, and that is captured in the plan. So just as a refresher, I should give a quiz, but ask you how many farms we have in the county. But we do have 558 farms. About half of those are full-time farms, and they rent about 91,000 acres, or they rent and own about a total of 91,000 acres of farmland in the county. And if you know your county total acreage, that's almost a third of the county total acreage of land that is owned or operated by farms. So they have a significant land impact. Agriculture is a major land use in our county. Additionally, the farms generate about $67 million in sales, and both that is products that are sold locally, but also products that are exported out of the county, namely dairy and field crops, and so that contributes to the economy in a significant way. Dairy is our largest sector. It's about half of the total ag sales, and the crop farming associated with it is also the major land use. We do have lots of local food production that's increasing in our county, and so that has a significant impact in that we can buy local foods from our farmers, and it also can, you know, preserves our ability to feed ourselves, which might be something important in the future. And our farmers, I think by and large, as far as I know, what I see, are good stewards of the land. They protect the soils and the environment. Of the about 50,000 acres of actively farmed land, 16,000 acres is actually under organic management, which I think is also pretty huge and cool that we have that happening in Tompkins County. So the plan basically provides a blueprint for protecting agriculture and the prime farmland and for promoting a viable farming sector in the local economy. We have six theme areas or strategy focus areas, and they include farmland protection, policies that are supportive of agriculture, environmental protection, ag awareness and education, future farmers. This is an issue that we've noticed. We need the next generation of farmers. Some of our farmers are getting older. Local foods is an important sector of the plan, and then agriculture economic development in general. And the state is very interested in seeing activities related to ag economic development. There's state funding, and that's one of the goals of the state is to have these plans linked to some of those state funds. So it provides opportunities for farmers in the future. So by adopting the plan, the County Ag and Farmland Protection Board will start to turn its focus on implementation of all the recommendations in the plan. Obviously, we'll prioritize them. We won't do everything at once. But we're Cooperative Extension is a partner in helping with the implementation, as are our agency partners in the county, like Soil and Water District, NRCS, FSA, those kinds of organizations that we work with, Groundswell. And so we'll be actively engaged on working on the goals, ensuring the goals are realized. And so we're looking forward to the ability to continue and grow our diverse and viable agriculture sector, and so that it can continue to contribute jobs to the local economy, and that farmers will continue also to be good stewards of the land and guard those resources that we have in our county. And we hope that the consumers and policymakers also realize the importance of agriculture and help to help its continuation by adopting favorable policies. So thank you, and that's it for me.
Thank you, Monica. Also have Ed Scheffler.
Good evening. My name is Ed Scheffler. I am chair of the Tompkins County Ag and Farmland Protection Board. My wife and I operate a small dairy farm in Groton and also have a small on-farm retail. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the updated County Ag Plan. The plan is a result of 13 meetings, which include 8 focus groups, 4 public meetings, and a public hearing. It's a result of thousands of hours of research, input from dozens of farmers and ag professionals. We believe the plan is complete, comprehensive, farmer-driven, and represents what the ag community wants to see in the future. It's a picture of our past and a vision for the future. Monica spoke about the goals, strategies, and action steps. I'd like to speak very quickly specifically about one of those, which is local food. Tompkins County has always been a hub of the local food movement and the foodie movement. We'd like to encourage that, and the committee believes that that's important to encourage for the future. We see a lot of pressure from large commercial operations, but we believe that there's room for large commercial dairies as well as small diversified operations. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ed, and thank you for your service on the Ag and Farmland Protection Board. Are there other folks who would like to speak at the public hearing on the Ag and Farmland Protection Plan? If so, please go to the microphone. Not seeing any. Are there any questions from our legislators? And we'll close the public hearing. And we'll open the next public hearing. The next public hearing is on the Tompkins-Cortland Community College operating budget. And I'm going to invite up to the front Dr. Carl Haynes, who is the president of Tompkins-Cortland Community College.
Thank you. be happy to give a brief overview of the budget that's before you tonight for consideration. I thought what I'd do is just maybe highlight briefly the revenue assumptions that are the basis for our proposal, and some highlights on the expenditure side, and then, of course, address any questions that any of you or others in the audience may have tonight. With regard to the revenue assumptions, the three or four points. One is that our state aid is increasing by the state appropriation this year by $100 per full-time equivalent student. It's about $150 less than what was proposed, and remains $68 less than our state aid support was 5 years ago. So we continue to struggle. If you look at page, the third page in on the budget proposal that you have in front of you, you'll notice that our under the revenue section, the state aid portion of our budget is going up by 0.08%. Part of the reason for that is enrollment, core enrollment is going down a bit, and for that, that's why the that's a very small increase in our state aid actual revenue for next year. The full-time tuition is going up $150 per year. That's $75 per student, or 3.3%, and part-time tuition is going up by $7 per credit hour. And again, if you look at the revenue portion of the budget, that will yield 0.37% increase in our tuition revenue for next year. Again, even with those increases, the offset in terms of enrollment is causing a very small increase in actual revenue. We are projecting about a 31-32 FTE decrease in enrollment. That doesn't sound like a lot, like 1%. However, our core enrollment in the fall and spring semesters will be, in the fall semester, we're projecting about a 4% decline, in the spring about 2.5%. And other cohorts of our enrollment, however, are growing. Our concurrent enrollment program with the area school districts continues to grow, as well as our global international partnerships continues to grow. So while that's somewhat offsetting in terms of the our FTE base of the college, which helps our state aid, it doesn't offset the tuition loss that we experience. The our chargeback revenue, in other words, the revenues that we receive from other counties, again, if you look in the budget proposal, you'll see that that's going up 3.9%. That is going up primarily because of a formula adjustment, not because of the enrollment growth from the out-of-county students. And that's a formula that really is driven by the state state process and has given us a little bit of a bump this year. And, of course, for sponsor contribution, we are proposing a 2% cash increase for our sponsor support and authorization to draw 2% equivalent from our fund balance. And you'll see that in the sponsor share and, of course, the other, the appropriated cash surplus line for the $91,000, which is the portion that would come from the fund balance. And that's a portion from, again, the combined fund balance from both counties. That probably is a highlight as far as the revenue assumptions on the expenditure side. Again, if you look at the salary line, you'll notice that that is going down by 2%. Even though we are meeting our contractual obligations with the three various employee associations of the college, we are reducing staff between 8 and 10 positions, altogether 8.3 full-time equivalent positions. It's a combination of full-time and part-time jobs. All of that, by the way, was either a result of either normal attrition and or retirements, and that there were no layoffs that resulted in those reduced positions. We are trying to sustain our equipment line at the $100,000 level, which is down substantially from previous years, and down about $50,000 from our actual projection for year-end this year, even though the budget last year was $100,000 during the year. We had to cut that because of, again, the enrollment decline that we experienced. The contractual experiences during the current budget year. We reduced significantly across the college many of the departments' operating budgets by a total of about $300,000-$400,000, and we're sustaining those cuts into the forthcoming budget year, so there'll be no increases other than those areas where we had contractual obligations. You'll notice the contractual offset number is growing by 14.5%. The operative word there is offset. You know that we don't charge tuition for the programs that we do with our area school districts, primarily because the school districts are incurring the cost of the instruction and academic support for those courses. But because we don't charge tuition, we have to offset that cost in the budget. So the line that is a contractual, that's where we expense the item, that offset tuition. However, the tuition revenue is in the tuition line that's in the tuition line in the revenue side. So it literally is an offset. It's a wash. Because we do that, of course, that allows us to get state aid on those students, which is significant. We're getting close to 1,000 FTEs in terms of the program that we offer to 40-some school districts around the region. The employee benefits, again, we took the lead from Erie County in terms of the health insurance, bumping 5% for next year, and we got a nice reduction in the employee retirement system of 10%, which really was a big benefit to us as well in terms of our budgeting. So we have, as I've said, taken a number of steps to curtail costs with reduced staff, reduced operating expenses, and doing a lot of restructuring and realigning of staff in order to accommodate those changes, as well as reduction in, of course, a lot of courses and sections of courses that we haven't had to offer because of the reduced enrollment. So the bottom line budget is going up 0.54%, which is probably one of the smaller increases we've had in a number of years, as a matter of fact, in my recollection, actually. And but we do think it's a responsible budget and one that I think we've worked hard to provide to you and still continue support that we provide to our students and to our communities in general. So be happy to take any questions that anyone might have on any aspect of our budget proposal.
Do we have any questions in the legislature on that? I will turn to the audience or anyone else who wants to speak about the budget after that. Anyone want to ask Dr. Haynes any questions? Carol Chalk.
I don't want to ask questions. I just want to sympathize with what a tough year you have and the challenges that you face.
Is there anyone else tonight who would like to speak on the public hearing regarding the Tompkins-Cortland Community College budget? Seeing none, President Haynes, we'd like to thank you, and I guess we'll adjourn the public hearing.
Thank you.
I wonder if folks would please stand with me and allegiance to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Can we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have a quorum. Martha Robertson.
Mike, if I might have a point of personal privilege to make
certainly
a statement. All right, and Kathy, I'd like this to be recorded for the record. I need to make a statement to the public. First, want to preface what I have to say by saying that 2003, I was chair of the Health and Human Services Committee, 12 years ago. In that position, I became aware of our desperate housing situation, the fortune we were spending on emergency bed nights for homeless shelters, the all sorts of problems that went along with that. I brought that to the attention of the entire legislature. That led to, and I'm just going ahead and say, I had a leadership role in making sure that we had a that we did a housing needs assessment. That led to the county's housing strategy and the housing fund with Cornell and the City of Ithaca. I've been a housing advocate as the main driver anti-poverty policy issue where public dollars could make a difference. This has been a core part of my work as a legislator. Environmental issues have also been core. I've spent personal time, personal money, going to Washington, Albany, New York, lobbying on environmental issues. So I've been in this office 13 and a half or so years. Frankly, at great personal cost in many ways. Last year, or 2 years ago, I decided to run for Congress, as you know, and many, many people in this room and in this county supported my campaign. 2014, the county had to decide what to do with this, with the library, old library building, that parcel. When the responses to the RFEI came through, it was clear to me immediately that a number of the proposers had been donors to my campaign, so I recused myself. Chair Lane had put me on the committee, and I said I really have to step off that committee, and I can't even be part of that decision. So I recused myself. You might also know I lost the election. And then in December, we issued the RFP for the next stage of the decision-making. It didn't occur to me, since I knew I wasn't running for Congress again, and I knew I wasn't up for the legislature again for more than 2 years, it didn't occur to me that there was any longer a conflict of interest of any sort. And the chair of the ethics board didn't raise it, the county attorney didn't raise it, nobody raised it, until I got a phone call today from the media. It appears a member of this body pointed out to the media that I had received contributions from one of the proposers here. And little known to me, not remembered by me at all, 2 years ago we passed a revised code of ethics, which doesn't just say that we have to recuse if there's a current conflict of some sort, my husband is part of a thing or whatever, but it looks back 2 years, 24 months. So I guess Dooley's shaking, nodding her head, so she remembered, but I didn't remember that. Jonathan Wood didn't remember that. And so as soon as I got off the phone and got back into town from volunteer work in Seneca Falls, I went to Jonathan, and he showed me the clause and said that, yes, you know, it sort of looks like I have to recuse myself from this issue and from this discussion. So, I've done everything from, you know, whenever Ithaca Neighborhood Housing wants a letter of support, wants me to show up at a meeting to speak in favor of a project or better housing, all those. Yeah, I've done whatever anybody asked me in terms of housing, and I'm proud of that record. It's a core belief. And these are the facts that led me to my vote 2 weeks ago, the issue that housing is desperately needed in this community. It's a public good that we can make a difference with in this decision. And environmental issues matter as well, and those will be well served. But I, at this point, I'm recusing myself from further consideration on the old library proposal. And I wish you all the best. And when this discussion gets going, I get to go somewhere else. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Martha. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session later on tonight with respect to personnel, a particular person. Now we go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that anyone has to speak to the legislature on any topic. We ask that anyone who wants to speak, please sign a blue card. I have a number of them at this point. In signing the blue card, you're agreeing to our rules in which you are saying you agree to the three-minute time limit. And we have a countdown screen over here, at the end of which there will be a low audible signal, and we ask you to conclude if you haven't already. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or to speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to the microphone and yield the floor, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. So if anyone else who I don't have a blue card for wants to send one up, please do that. First speaker I have tonight is Irene Stein. Please go to the microphone and state your municipality and your name.
My name is Irene Stein. Municipality is the town of Ithaca. I'm speaking tonight as the former director of the Office for the Aging, and I'm speaking on behalf of what I see as the interest of the thousands of seniors that have participated, are participating, and will participate in the programs of Lifelong. They come from every town and from the city of Ithaca. Lifelong is the former Senior Citizens Council. It started in the 30s, and it has served our county very well. It has provided socialization, intellectual stimulation, and physical stimulation for our seniors. Right now, Lifelong, like many not-for-profits, is in a less than optimal financial situation. When you consider that it might have to find housing elsewhere other than on the library site under the aegis of a development proposal in the very expensive city market and elsewhere, it could actually deliver a devastating blow to that organization. I would hate to see that, and I would hate to see them coming to you for substantial help. You have three solid proposals. I am totally aware of that. But only one proposal, only one, provides solid, dependable housing for Lifelong. I therefore ask you to respond to the interests of the seniors of this county. They are your parents, your grandparents. They deserve to have your support in maintaining Lifelong in a maximal situation for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Next I have Joel Harlan, and after that I have Brian Wilbur.
My name's Joel Harlan. I'm from Newfield. You all know me. You know what I'm up to. I got to say this for the library. You can pick what you want. Well, the new style is like the third one on the list. I went to Syracuse, and they're big. They're big apartments with peaked roofs. Like the Highland Road up there by Thurston Ave. The new style is peaked roofs, not boxed apartments, complexes. Now for the future. You must make a 20-30-year plan down the road to main growth. City of Ithaca is about ready to run out of room here for growth and buildings and apartments. Town of Ithaca, I know, is doing their job, but a lot of negativity against everything. And Lansing. But the rest of the county and all the municipalities are like a dead stick floating in the road and in the water. They don't want to grow much. But it's got to be open. All towns and all villages has got to get with it and build apartments of different kinds and affordable housing. I see the future of what's going to come in another 20, 30 years. And it might turn out it's going to be really getting these anti-developers and environmentalists and farmers and stuff. You're going to have to use 13 from Lansing all the way up to Cortland, like Big Flats and Horseheads. You got to stretch out and make business. You got to bring businesses in. A lot of people running business out of this county. And a lot of people can't afford to live in this county. So you must think of that. You know, the future is going to be right up to 13. When I said to Cortland during the Columbine shooting that day, I said, why don't you get Cortland, Ithaca College, TC3, and Cornell and make spinoffs and create jobs like Silicon Valley. It'd be great right from Lansing all the way up to Cortland. Create jobs. But a lot of people want to run all these businesses and all this other stuff out of the county. People do not want to live downtown a lot. They want to live out in the hills. They want to live in the valleys. They want to live where it's peaceful, quiet. They don't want to come down here with all the rat race, you know. That's what you got to think of. A lot of people don't want to come down and live here. They want to move out in the outskirts. So you got a lot of plans coming up ahead of you in another 20, 30 years. And you may not like it because, you know, there's farmers and green land and stuff like that you got to worry about. But I tell you, Big Flats and Horseheads and Elmar Heights are making multi-billion dollar business off what they got. And
Harlan,
it's growing worse.
You didn't get a
signal, and they do have a corny glass.
Your time has expired at this point.
I've already been to Elmar, too, trying to give them ideas about what we're doing up City Ithaca to revive that city. That's a dead ghost town down there.
Thank you very much. Brian Wilbur, then Graham Gillespie.
Hi, my name is Brian Wilbur. I live in the town of Dryden, and I'm here representing the Lifelong Board of Directors. I want to simply make a quick status report. A week ago yesterday, we met with Doug Sutherland, and we, the Lifelong Building Committee, I should say, met with Doug Sutherland and Noah Demarest to further explore. They didn't revise our library proposal. They delved into more depth with what ideas they had for Lifelong. And since that time, we have been evaluating the impact of that proposal on Lifelong, which is the board's responsibility. We're still working with the board to figure out what of the proposals we've heard meets the needs of Lifelong best. That's our job. And we intend to be at the committee meeting on Friday morning, hopefully to provide more information, and we still need to get back to Franklin Properties with a response to what they proposed to us. So that's what's transpired. The Lifelong Board is working quite hard, trying to do the right thing for Lifelong first and make sure the community benefits as well. So that's my message. Thank you.
Thank you. Graham Gillespie, then Ann Sullivan.
Thank you. I'm Graham Gillespie, Holt Architects, here with the Travis Hyde team. I live in the town of Ithaca, Village of Cahuilla Heights, and I want to speak about the old library RFP and proposal. And we've handed out some information packet. A lot of what is going on outside is being broadcast over social media. And that's a great media for getting information out to a much wider swath of people. It's not always the most accurate form of communication. So the information packet is presented not so much as new information, although there are a few new things in there that you probably haven't seen before, but as more as a reiteration of some of the major points that we've been trying to make and perhaps haven't been making as strongly as we can, or haven't been getting out and being discussed in the right proper form. A case in point is perhaps what came out of the city last week, and we'll have a discussion about that a little bit later at an appropriate time and address those points. But in particular, in the packet, I'd like you to focus in on a few points. And I think it's really important, especially on the discussion of carbon and sustainability, to look at what each proposer has proposed there. Look at, in particular, about the different parts of the building, the foundations, the envelope that everybody laudably has decided that they need to replace in order to have any chance of making an Architecture 2030 goal or even any sort of lead goal. And I would ask you to also look at our rooftop solar panel proposal, because it's not inconsequential in the overall renewables package. Along that line, the discussion of transit is another way where we're reducing carbon impacts to the overall proposal. And over time, we feel that it has a much greater chance of reducing our carbon footprint than just the building itself. We are looking at a heat pump proposal in conjunction with Sustainable Tompkins. And again, case in point, it's not because there were any miscalculations on what we were looking at, but it was at the request of Legislator Chalk and others that we're going back and taking another look at that. Brian has talked a lot about lifelong and eloquently so I'll leave that to him. Look at the deconstruction discussion in the packet, and also look at the city's zoning approach to the whole proposal, the RFP. So thank you very much, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Ann Sullivan, then Nancy Metzger.
Hello, I'm Ann Sullivan. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm just representing myself. First, I came down here primarily to thank the six people who voted against the Travis Hyde project. I think it gave us all some really needed time to look at this again and think about it. I also thank Martha for recusing herself. I think it removes something, and I think Martha would have acted honorably and ethically, but it removes a shadow from this that she doesn't deserve. So, all good things. I've also written to all of you who voted for the Travis Hyde project, and thank you to those of you who have gotten back to me. I found the exchange very respectful. I haven't gotten to you yet, Sherman Lane.
Please use the microphone.
Oh, I haven't gotten to you yet, Sherman Lane, but you're on my list. You've all been courteous, and I appreciate that. I still, after listening to you, want to point out three things. I think listening to you, some of you are still confused, and you have a lot on your slate, so this is not an attack at all. I couldn't figure out half the things you guys have to deal with. Density is not stacking as many people into an apartment building as you can put on a space. That, you go back to New York City before Jacob Riis took his pictures. Density is the kind of housing, respect for the environment, and quite frankly, Franklin Stream is the best one, and I have doubts that Travis Hyde, as it is, will be able to get through the hurdles it's going to have to go through as is. I think the project, in my opinion, and I'm just a citizen, will have to be much smaller. The other thing about density is services. We desperately need services downtown. Do not deny us the opportunity to have walkable medical care. I just had cataract surgery, So I know what it's like to be dependent on friends and buses to get up to what I call the Great Northeast. The idea of having more doctors downtown thrills me, and it will be a great, great boon to our city. The other thing I want to talk about is lifelong. I am a 68-year-old granny. I am lifelong's constituency. But I urge lifelong to also be a good neighbor to us who live in the city. The Travis Hyde Project offloads its parking problems, its traffic, eats up a block, and really threatens the integrity of an iconic block in the city of Ithaca that I've loved for the past 31 years. I know there are various financial things going around. I hope the county lets us know about memos of agreement. Lifelong will not lose your home. I will personally do everything I can to make sure you have space in the Franklin Project. So thank you for listening. I think we can all come out winners in this project if we all just listen to each other.
Nancy Metzger and then Tom Sini.
Hello, I'm Nancy Metzger, and my husband and I, Tom Sini, own the DeWitt Park Inn. And I want to thank Martha for all her hard work with looking at the housing project crisis that we have in Ithaca. It's commendable. I'm here to talk about the IOPC and the Ithaca Landmarks Preservation Commission that both projects are going to have to undergo quite a bit of scrutiny before any decision is really made about what's going to happen and what the ultimate project is going to look like. And I think that this has to be taken under serious consideration because it could severely reduce the amount of units, and also perhaps one of the projects selected would not be able to get through the process. But just so you both all know that the I'm on the wrong page. Let's see. There's a Landmarks Preservation of the Municipal Code of the City, Chapter 228. And the purpose of this is to promote and safeguard the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the public through the protection, enhancement, and perpetuation of building structures, landscape features, architectural sites, and districts of historic and cultural significance. This municipal code also is designed to protect the value of historic properties and their owners' investments in them and stabilize historic neighborhoods, foster civic pride in the legacy and beauty and achievements of the past, protect and enhance the city's attractiveness to tourists and visitors, and support the support and stimulus to the economy thereby provided, strengthen the economy of the city, promote the use of building structures, landscape features, blah, 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 for the education, pleasure, and welfare of the people of the city. And finally, ensure the harmonious, orderly, and efficient growth and development of the city. And with that, that's one of the charges that the ILPC Commission has to look at. And then they have to issue a certificate of appropriateness for new construction. And the things that are considered are the general design and character of the proposed alteration or new construction relative to the existing features of the property, the scale and visual compatibility of the proposed alteration or new construction in relationship to the property itself, surrounding properties, and the neighborhood, texture, materials, colors in relation to similar features of the property, and in the neighborhood, visual compatibility with surrounding properties, including the proportions of the property's facade, proportions and arrangement of windows, doors, and other openings, roof shape, and the rhythm and spacing of the properties along the street, including setbacks, and finally, the importance of historic, physical, and visual features to the significance of the property. Thanks. I'm out of time. This is a very serious issue that I believe you guys are charged with taking under consideration, and thank you so much for your hard work.
Thank you, Tom Sini, and then Frost Travis.
My name is Tom Sini. We all want Lifelong to succeed. It's not like there's a for and against here. We want it to be around for another 62 years. But the effort to save it, to make it more viable, was not supposed to be in one developer's hand. Originally, the RFEI mentioned that and this is a quote, it wanted to encourage the synergy and collaboration with adjacent land uses such as Lifelong. And then in the RFP, due to perhaps some legal advice, Lifelong's name was dropped, and it just simply said community needs. But even at that, Franklin tried to work out a proposal with Lifelong. Unfortunately, Travis Holt offered them a more tempting offer, and the entire selection process seems to have been circumvented. It seems like nothing else is really relevant now. You know, it seems like that we're not talking about the other selection criteria. But in truth, the ability to save Lifelong and the desire really rests within our county. And it shouldn't be in one developer's hand. And I think we all have a role to play in that. I think it's more clear than ever, if Lifelong is to be the keystone of this whole selection process, like it's sounding it is, then we either have to rewrite the RFP and put that clearly in there, or, and that would require another round of developers being selected, or instead we should get back to the original selection criteria and yet save Lifelong in a way that doesn't depend on one developer. There's apparently funding available for this purpose, and the county should pursue these options instead of depending on the deep pockets of simply one developer.
Thank you, Frost Travis, and then Ann Callis.
Hi, good evening. My name is Frost Travis. I thought it would be helpful to speak just a little bit about my family and company and how it's relevant to this project. My family's been a part of this community for four generations since my great-grandfather, Arthur Allen, came to Cornell to study birds and to go on to create the Lab of Ornithology in 1915. His understanding of the natural world and his belief in the need to preserve it is a value that's closely held in our family. Our company is a charter member of the Ithaca 2030 District. I am a member of the board as well as an investor in the Black Oak Wind Farm. I'm also a past board member of Ithaca Carshare. Independently of the old library project, I signed a letter of intent with Renovus Solar to create a commercial-scale solar farm to service the approximately 3-megawatt electricity demand for our existing property portfolio. Our company stepped in at the historic Clinton House when historic Ithaca faced bankruptcy in 2009, and we restored it to financial health as well as provided a home for New Roots Charter School. Recently, I met with Stacy Black, a local union representative. We had a productive discussion about how we could incorporate local and union labor into this project by partnering with their apprentice program. Our company, just like the union, has a deep conviction that one should take care of one's staff. The average tenure in our company is better than 10 years. Why? Because we offer effectively 100% health coverage. Our staff members' out-of-pocket expense is $15 a month for full family coverage. We match the first 4% of our 401k retirement plan, which is available to all staff. If you take care of people, they will take care of you. When our team decided to pursue this project, we responded to both the upzoning of the site by the City of Ithaca and the RFP by creating what we believe is an appropriate building that is in keeping with the massing on the south side of Court Street for several blocks and the west side of Cayuga Street. Because the legislature asked us to, I met with Sustainable Tompkins to explore ways to completely electrify our project. We are actively exploring different energy systems, including air-to-air and ground-source heat pumps. We would certainly seek to provide the power needs of this project from renewable electricity if it's feasible. We've identified a significant lack of middle-income housing in downtown Ithaca, and considering the strategic partnership we hope to bring with Lifelong, we felt that a targeted market of mature professionals, 50-plus, and seniors would be a good fit for this particular site. Our rent structure places the apartments right in the mid-range for rents locally and regionally. Affordability is one of the key points in our decision to offer apartments as opposed to condominiums. Aside from the extra time and cost to put the legal framework in place for ownership units, the cost to build them requires a sales price that took us out of the median range market. We couldn't make the numbers work without seeking additional grant funding, such as the highly competitive Regional Economic Development Council grants, thus our decision to pursue a financially sound and financeable strategy of providing apartments. Our concept will enable a high-performing, mixed-use building with valuable public amenities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann Kellis, and then Elizabeth Reed, please.
Thank you. I'm here as a concerned citizen. I also do want to thank Martha for recusing herself in this situation from both any discussion publicly on this matter and any voting. And thank you so much. That's very appropriate in this situation. Secondly, I do want to make the point that I don't think that anybody in the public thinks that this is choosing one project over another is a personal evaluation or judgment of the character of any of the developers. I think that the quality of developers that have submitted proposals on both cases is superb. And I just want to make sure that is known publicly and expressed continuously with deep respect. However, I am continuously, I've been in this process of evaluation for a year and a half now, and still remain in support of the Franklin development for multiple reasons. One, and I want to repeat the issue, deeply concerned about Lifelong being put at the center of this issue. I now know of four legislators who have expressed that this is their main concern and they will make a decision based exclusively on this. It is not part of the selection criteria, and also the fate of Lifelong should not be dependent on any one developer. It should be taken care of and supported regardless, and I think that it should be made as a separate proposal, that we should be looking at the library for the library's sake and what's going on here in the library, and any development that's chosen can work with Lifelong to make sure that Lifelong is okay. And I think that there are two proposals that are out there that could do that clearly. I've heard some people make comments that the Franklin proposal is significantly weaker because it's based on grants. I would say that both have pros and cons. They have been informed that their proposal would be incredibly competitive. And yes, there is a risk that it's based on grants. We also know that for the Travis Hyde development, it is also risky if a significant amount of their building is cut, so much so that they pull out completely because it's not cost effective. So one of the things that I would ask from legislators is that we have that number. What is the number of units that can be cut from the Travis Hyde development to, at that point, they would pull out? And would that therefore make the success or the survival of Lifelong contingent on that? I want to know what point, what percentage of the building can be cut, and they'll still move forward with that development. That is a risk that we are looking at, particularly given the precedent of ILPC. So there is risk on both sides that absolutely must be considered when you are evaluating which project is the most appropriate for Lifelong. So again, let's pull Lifelong out of this. The other issue that I want to bring up is density. We keep talking about one project being the most appropriate for density. If it is cut significantly, then there won't be the difference that we're looking at. The last one that I want to point out is the sustainability issue. It has been published publicly misinformation that the Franklin project as well as the Travis Hyde are essentially tear down developments, and that is absolutely not true. There have been third-party assessments that have shown that isn't true, and I really encourage you to talk to them about what embedded energy, because 90% of the embedded energy in the building is in the cement and the steel itself, and there was never any misinformation that any other part of the Franklin proposal, the building of the original library, would be saved except for the concrete frame, the frame and the concrete foundation, and that holds a majority of the embedded energy. So I wanted to make that distinction. Thank you.
Elizabeth Reed and then Dilmarin Dunham.
Okay. All right. Talk to the microphone, all right. I am, my name is Dilmarin Dunham, and I'm a resident.
We're having a little trouble hearing you. Could you speak as loudly as you can, please?
All right. I am Dilma Randanam, and I'm a resident of Ithaca since fall of 1971. I am one of those older people called the senior citizens, and I have a lot of concerns in relation to this fate of the old public library. My concern is, even though Lifelong was not in the original selection criteria, it seems like the whole thing is depending on Lifelong, and I would love to keep the Lifelong because it has been very important to me as well as a lot of people. I teach, I'm volunteer to teach there, and I live very close, and I love Lifelong. However, I'm just considering a few facts. Although other people talked about a lot of things, I'm going to tell you my concerns. As a senior citizen, if Travis Hyde proposal goes through and they move the Lifelong there, how are all those senior citizens going to get there? There isn't enough parking. Are they going to walk? I am pretty strong and I walk a lot, but I still refuse in the ice and snow of Ithaca to walk to go to Lifelong, even though I live close. A lot of people don't live close as I am. They drive. So where are they going to park? That bothers me. And this is a car-driven culture. Somebody said that you can walk. Downtown is very walkable, even for downtown residents. I can walk, but I don't want to go to Wegmans. There aren't any, or Tops. There aren't any place that I can buy my food. I don't want to go there and load up my cart and schlep it to the bus, onto the bus. I cannot lift it up, or I refuse to lift it up because I don't want to hurt myself. And a lot of senior citizens won't do that either. So I hope that we can come to a decision which will save the Lifelong but also serve the people in a more realistic way. Thank you.
Thank you. Was Elizabeth Reed here tonight? Did she leave? Okay. Then let's go to Hilda Molesky, and after her we have Katie Stoner.
Hi, everybody. So I'm Hilda Molesky, and I just wanted to say tonight, oops, I'm acting like a rock star now, right? This has been such an interesting dialogue with the community, and it has really caused me to have an internal dialogue with myself on the different issues that have been presented. And what has become very clear to us as a community is that Lifelong is an organization that matters tremendously. And our elders are people who matter to us tremendously. I think Lifelong does not only represent the elderly, but also our elders in the community, and who are the folks who have a great deal of wisdom, as we would see it. So when I look at this dialogue within myself, what I came to understand was, as a person, I feel a moral imperative to my elders, always, not only my own family to support them, but to the elders in the community, and to support them in any way that I can, be it give them a seat on the bus, a hand at Wegmans, or to really consider their issues. And while we couldn't anticipate how important Lifelong's needs would be when the RFP was put together, I think that's become very clear now. And I would like to ask the legislature separate out the issue of Lifelong and their need for funding. I don't think you could have foreseen that when the RFP was put into place. I think it's become very clear that that's a very important issue. But I don't think it should be rolled into the other issue which is what building is best for the community as a whole on our historic plaza, our historic park. And with regards to housing, there's been a whole corridor. When you talk about rentals, when people talk about rentals downtown, there's a whole corridor that's been zoned for units that will be putting up rental units, and that's the West State Street corridor. As we all know, there will be many rental units put up along that corridor. So while I feel a moral imperative to my elders, I also think that there's a moral imperative to listen to our younger generation, who are incredibly clear that there's an urgency with regards to our environment. We no longer have the luxury to put up buildings that don't take into account the impact on our environment. And there's a very clear-cut difference in the two proposals that are on the table today in terms of our environmental landfill. I also believe our elders have a moral imperative to the community. And to come to and to take a stand, I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us all to take a stand for each other. And I believe in and respect our elders. And I ask you to please, please, as a legislator, separate their issue out. Let's support them and give them the attention they deserve for the financing they need. But don't roll it into a building issue that has many other impacts on the community. Thank you.
Well, we have Katie Stoner and then Jan Rhodes Norman.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. My name is Katie Stoner. I spoke last time in support of the Franklin Project, and I just wanted to reiterate that I'm here as a concerned citizen, someone who's passionate about creating an increasingly livable, vibrant, and thriving community, which I think we're well on our way to doing. I just wanted to talk briefly about context. I know it's been part of the conversation, but as most of you I'm sure know, the city's comprehensive plan committee recently voted through a draft of the first of the comprehensive plan that's being updated. And that plan documents what's to me a very exciting and inspiring vision for the future of the city. It makes clear to me that we're moving away from a more traditional paradigm of development that relies on outmoded, outdated policies and practices, and that we're, through this process, not only this comprehensive planning committee, but the citizens have really made clear their preferences for a more humanistic, thoughtful, and holistic approach to placemaking. At the outset of the comp plan draft, it states, Ithacans place a high value on the sense of belonging, support, and connection that are inherent in our community identities. The character and livability of our existing neighborhoods must be protected. Just a few other key phrases in the draft that I'd like to share just to help you, asking you to kind of keep in the forefront of your thinking on this issue about the fact that this development will happen in a broader context. So the comp plan says, following best practices, we will promote forward-looking, mixed-use, commercial and residential growth. That includes a range of housing types and employment opportunities. Ithaca's resilience will be enhanced by fostering increasingly compact and well-designed mixed-use development in suitable locations. This kind of development will help lighten tax burdens, connect jobs and services to public transit and housing, more efficiently incorporate green infrastructure, and reduce the pressure of sprawl on the green space and agricultural land surrounding the city. Connected, compact, mixed-use developments that offer financial, environmental, and quality of life benefits can accommodate unmet housing demand and prepare us for future growth. So keeping that in mind, also, as I'm sure you all know, the Planning and Development Board of the city unanimously recommended the Franklin Project. 7 of the 10 Common Council members endorsed or supported Franklin. And I know that many of you are, that you really care about density. And I, too, as a sustainability and smart growth advocate, favor density. And I just want to I want to emphasize the importance of doing that in the right context. And I caution you against overlooking the considerable benefits of a still relatively high dense project at a human scale with the added value of community and commercial space. I also told Linda Mahoney, who spoke last time about sick buildings or healthy buildings, that I would deliver letters that she had signed by community members. So I have those here. There's about 30 of them. I don't know who I can give them to, but Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Jan Rhodes Norman, then Arthur Birnbaum.
Hi. So I spoke the last time, and one benefit, again, of being one of the last ones to go is that so much of what I was going to say has been said. Ann Sullivan, Katie, speaking to the comp plan, density, form-based code, I completely agree that we do need housing, absolutely. And actually, while we're here right now, the planning committee is looking at possibly granting a variance to 210 Hancock for the Neighborhood Pride affordable housing development, which would be wonderful and appropriate for that neighborhood. I'm a local businesswoman. My home and my studio are 2.5 blocks away from here. What we're looking at is really which project is best suited to this neighborhood. And as a number of people have said, one project, doing the Franklin proposal for the library site does not preclude doing the type of development that the Travis Holt project would provide. There's lots of room in the community to do another development. For this particular historic neighborhood, the Franklin proposal is human scale. It's congruent with the historic neighborhood, and in addition to everything everybody else has said that I agree with, I hope you'll take those things into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Arthur Birnbaum, then Pastor Michael Vincent Craig.
Hello, I'm Arthur Birnbaum. I've been attending classes at Lifelong for about 9 years. And this has been an organization in which has, I feel, a perpetual connection and an enrichment of my life, and all the people that I go to classes with feel the same way. We are all connected by a reverence for each other's elderhood and being regarded, and we regard each other as those people who are taking classes to not just learn for ourselves, but for our families and our friends and our influence, and with everybody who looks to us with some kind of wisdom. It took me a while to figure that out, and the idea that our particular age group has been in the past sort of marginalized, like in nursing homes. But that's not the way it is at all at Lifelong. Everyone regards each other, respects each other, learns from each other. The subjects that are taught by the various teachers who do not get paid, just us, we do the paying. Because we want to learn without an agenda of productivity, of competing, but just learning how to get along and understand the world in all the different facets of given by the teachers who are teaching their wisdom to us so we can pass it on. I would hate to see our organization going to the wind, because I think we provide an inspiration to all the people that we are in contact with. And many people in the organization have given up a lot of their time to go to these meetings to see who cares. I do, and so does everybody else who goes to classes. Please keep us downtown. Thank you.
Thank you. Pastor Michael Vincent Cray, while he's coming up, I'll make a last call for blue cards. Anyone who wants to speak tonight, please fill out a blue card and send it up.
Chair Lane, if I can ask a point of order before my time begins. I had a letter that I had written to Commissioner Patricia Carey at Human Services. I'd like that included in the record, but I haven't been able to print that out. Can I deliver that and be part of this session's consideration?
We will certainly receive that communication. It won't become a part of the minutes, but you can
certainly submit that. We always accept things for people give to us.
Thank you.
That'll be, if you'd like it circulated, we'll make sure everyone has a copy of it.
I appreciate the clarification by the chair, because I'm not familiar with all the processes of our local government. But I have to first thank Chairman Lane, the members of our county legislature, all of our constituents and other interested parties who have gathered here, because I have not had this opportunity since until I moved up here last August. And so it is a good forum, and part of the frustration sometimes, or part of the frenzy that we might feel, is that we need to express ourselves as best we can on very important matters that aren't just concerning money. That said, my name is Michael Vincent Crea. I pastor my own pro bono human rights ministry, One World Life Systems. I'm a resident of Varna since August. 30 years ago, I was wrongly fired. Well, let me put it in a positive way. I won the most comprehensive Peace Corps appeal they ever received. It was after I dug the grave of a woman who died of mastitis, an infected tit, which a cow in Canandaigua, where I worked, or a woman in this room could be healed in a week's time of antibiotics. But I ask you now, just as we cared in terms of me trying to complete projects, and that's what I'd like to do, I moved up here hoping that my human rights would be respected. There was a decision against Michael Bloomberg and Human Services in New York to house me in 2011. I ask you, why is it, and you are part of our legislature and our government, that we can put people out of homes in 30 days' time, but then we tell the elderly, we tell disabled like myself, especially since I put in a Section 8 on April 21st, 2009, and Bloomberg on the front page of December 8th, 2010 was outed as having experimented on us as guinea pigs, didn't put us into the system. But why can we put people out of their homes in 30 days and yet tell someone who's disabled like myself, who served our country, you have to wait 2 or 3 more years because your decision was for another jurisdiction? We send our children 10,000 miles away to kill other people's children with the same tax money that you're giving to realtors. I don't like this expression that Ithaca is a 10-square-mile area surrounded by reality. We have to get real.
If I can read this before my time is up.
Article 25 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Everyone has the right to the standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of oneself and one's family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widow or widowerhood, old age, and other lack of livelihood and circumstances beyond one's control. And the second point, motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. All children, whether born in and out of wedlock, shall enjoy the same protection.
If I may just conclude and say, I ask you, as someone already mentioned the morality, as someone just brought up about what we need to look at as people, who do you answer to? Are you morally bankrupt? It's not about buildings. It's about everyone in this room makes up who we are as a county, as a community, as human constituents, neighbors to one another. Thank you.
Thank you. Did Martin Hatch return? He thought he'd try to come back before the end of the privilege of the floor. I guess not. We'll go to Philip Wacker Heflin, please, and then finally with Sarah Schaffson.
Hello. My name is Philip Wacker Heflin. I reside in the city of Ithaca. And my wife takes Tai Chi down at Lifelong every Friday, and I get to experience Lifelong rather vicariously. And I hear about the events before and after class. And my mother passed last fall at the age of 86. She lived in a community that didn't have a Lifelong. I wish she had. I'm not fully aware of the details of all the proposals, but I do know that we're capable of some rather creative solutions. As I was listening to people speak and I was looking at this room, I see the respect for the history and tradition of this building illuminated by LED lighting. We can find creative solutions to things. We can honor what needs to be honored and answer the needs of, you know, the coming generation. But resources like Lifelong are extremely important in whatever is decided with the development of the library. Recognizing the importance of Lifelong, understanding its intrinsic qualities that make it so valuable to the elders in our community, make sure that you find a solution, whether it's part of this project or it's part of work going forward, that Lifelong is preserved and that its character is preserved. And one final note, my mother was born before telephones in her neighborhood, before radio broadcasts. Her last Christmas, she was thrilled to get an iPad because now she was with the program. To a degree, that's true. But the more we can maintain traditional settings for our elderly, the more that we don't ask them to continually adapt to a world that feels comfortable for us but is foreign for them, that's really the best thing that we can do for them. There are enough challenges to find ways to keep life familiar to them. It's very important. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sarah Safson and then Chris Kale.
Hi, I'm Sarah Schaffs, and I live in the city of Ithaca. And I'd like to raise a completely different point that was brought up at a previous meeting but hasn't been talked about tonight. I first have to say, though, that I agree. I support the Franklin Project for all the reasons that have been given, so I won't reiterate them. But I would like to talk about condominiums versus apartments in the city and the needs of older people, which I am one of. Some of us, many of us, bought our homes in Ithaca years ago when actually they were a little bit more affordable than they are now, and we've accumulated quite a bit of equity in our homes, and we love living in the city. We want to keep living in the city, and when it comes down to the point where we don't have the time, energy, whatever, to maintain those homes and we'd like to pass them along to younger people, we would like to stay in the city, and we can't afford to to flush our equity in our homes down the toilet. And so I would really like to speak on behalf of having condominiums downtown. I think it's a great thing. It may sound a little bit elitist, but frankly, the Travis Hyde project is not low-income housing. It's not moderate-income housing. It was described as market-rate apartments. And I would not like to rent a market-rate apartment after spending all of my life accumulating well-earned equity in my home. And I think I speak for a lot of other people. I have some good friends, actually, who just sold their house because they don't have the strength and energy to maintain it. And they desperately want to live in a place where they can pass that equity along to their children and grandchildren. So if we're thinking about the needs of older residents of the city, I would like to put in a plug for housing that preserves our equity so that we can pass it along and we can use it for our own retirement, our own financial needs as we get older and have something to pass along to our children and grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final speaker is Chris Kale.
Hi, thank you. I did not think I had much to add to some of what people had been saying about the Franklin Project, which I do also favor, probably for the simple reason that choosing the Franklin Project would allow the other project to be built somewhere else, and then we could have both projects, whereas the opposite is not the case. But I did want to add a little bit to how Lifelong's used. I've spent quite a bit of time at Lifelong recently. I am over 60 myself, but I don't go to classes and I'm not retired. But I have, the past couple of 3 years, taken on primary responsibility with my husband for the care of his 90-year-old mother, who lives at Clearbridge of Ithaca and has used a lot of services from Lifelong, predominantly being accessed from their parking lot using her walker. It's really not feasible for her to go a very long distance from a parking place. We usually drive her. We also use the facility ourselves quite a lot to attend caregiver groups for people who are caring for elders with Alzheimer's and dementia. And, you know, that group is folks who are very busy. You know, many of them don't have the luxury that I do of having their loved one living somewhere where there's a full-time staff. That those people make it at all is sometimes really remarkable. They're frequently late. They're running from one thing to another. And, you know, I guess we could have support groups somewhere else. But I want to speak to the fact that if there's one group of people that maybe has special needs to have parking nearby, it's people who use Lifelong. Thank you.
Thank you. Not seeing a municipal official. Is there a municipal official who wants to speak to us tonight? Guess not. That moves us to privilege of the floor for legislators. Who would like to speak? Dan Klein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have two things. One is that this Saturday, July 11th, is the Danby Fun Day. This is sort of the one community-wide event that happens in Danby every year. Parade starts at 10:30, and then throughout the rest of the day there will be games and there's music, there's a chicken barbecue, vendors, and other activities that are going on. So I just wanted to mention that. The other thing I want to mention is maybe a historical note of something that happened this week, which is that the Grateful Dead, a rock and roll band, played their last concert ever. It was their 50 years as a band.
We'll see.
And at least in that configuration, it'll be their last time. And a lot of people know the story, but some people may not, is that the Grateful Dead have a strong connection to Tompkins County, which is that on May 8, 1977, they played a concert at Cornell University, which has become the most famous Grateful Dead concert ever. And a lot of people would say the best Grateful Dead concert ever, and that's obviously debatable. The Grateful Dead get quoted a lot. The one that gets used all the time is "What a long, strange trip it's been," which I think is probably the truest words ever mentioned in rock and roll. I mean, I've never met a person who doesn't think that way about their own life, that it's been a long, strange trip. But I want to mention a different quote from their lyrics, a song called Terrapin Station, and the lyrics are, "Inspiration, move me brightly." I happen to think that inspiration is like the rarest thing in the world, and I just wanted to pause to note this historical moment because I know that the Grateful Dead has inspired a lot of people here in Tompkins County, and along with that historical connection to us, I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Dan, no one can top that, Dan.
Wait, meeting's over, I guess.
I lived really close to Cornell at that time, and there was this wonderful blue cloud that moved over my house during that concert. But at any rate, there's another event coming to Tompkins County called Grassroots, which will be probably the single biggest attended thing in the county every year, and that will be in Trumansburg. And there are many tent nights there. We don't make much money for the hotel fund, but a lot of tent nights are there. So please come out there. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or whenever it ends. But at any rate, it's a really cool event. And I hope as a senior, maybe I can make my way there at some point, but clearly everyone should.
Glenn Morey.
Thank you, Michael. I'd like everyone to know that the First National Bank of Groton
it's going to be spending 2015, or has been spending 2015, celebrating their sesquicentennial. It will culminate their celebration on Saturday, July 15th, from 1 to 4 in the Groton American Legion for a formal community celebration. A few interesting facts about the First National Bank of Groton. In January 1896, Lathena Marsh was elected president and making her the first woman in the country to be served as bank president. The First National Bank is, is the 148th oldest bank in the country, and the bank has had the same name for the last 150 years. They've earned a five-star rating from the Bauer Financial Research rating for the last 103 quarters. That's 26 years. And the bank has held the annual Groton Art Show for the past 45 years, and it's going to be held August 15th and 16th in the Groton office. So I just want to say congratulations to all the officers, Steve, Gary, Ellen, and Norma. Great job. So.
Thank you, Glenn. Leslie, McBean Claiborne.
And Dan. Well, yay, Supreme Court. Yay, marriage equality. Woohoo. Honey, wish my girl, Gail Trimble, was alive, that she can see this moment. She talked about it will happen many, many years ago before her untimely death. And, you know, she's wherever she is hearing about this. So on Thursday, this Thursday tonight, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Stewart Park, or 5:30, right in my book, Stewart Park, a community celebration for marriage equality. And I'm just thrilled. So please, please make an appearance. Show your support, community. Be there. If you can lend your support financially, bring some paper products, you know, cups, plates, forks, napkins, anything. It will be very, very helpful. We need to celebrate the pride that we all love when we respect and honor people's human rights. So I wanted to share that. I'm going to cry because I'm talking about trim. Secondly, as we continue to work on issues throughout our nation and community police relations, I want to give a big old shout out to the Ithaca Police Department and to invite and encourage all of the community to visit with IPD on Saturday, July 11th. From 9 to noon, the Ithaca Police Department is hosting, as far as I know, I've been here for a while now, this must have happened before I got here too, but I think it's first ever open house for the community. Come in, learn about what goes into police work, some of the programs they have, and visit and start or continue that process of working together and building relationship as community and police, because we all need to be working together, helping the police to police in the way they, our community and the police helping us to be good citizens. So please join them. That's what I wanted to share.
Thank you, Leslie. I've got Nathan, then Martha.
Another community event is that the Ithaca Dragon Boat Festival is this weekend, Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's funny how things just take a life of their own and grow over time. You know, the dragon boats were, they kind of got its start because I was at Cornell. I was a student, and I was good friends with this girl named Michelle Wong, and her father was the head of the Philadelphia Dragon Boat Association. And her father met my dad one day. And my dad at the time lived in Ithaca, and he was like, wow, that's a really cool thing that you have going on in Philly. So then my dad talked to people like Amy and Siv Somchamavong, who are still leaders over the you know, the Dragon Boat Association to this day. And they decided to pool money together from themselves and a few community partners to buy the first Dragon Boat. And that first Dragon Boat now has grown to this huge festival that is international and has been for the past several years, actually. And it's just amazing to see how much of a community event this has grown to and how much pride is generated, how much activity, how much economic activity that's generated because of this event. And so it's really cool that, you know, a little idea like that can, in a place like Ithaca with the right environment, really flourishes into something beautiful.
I think, Nathan, this is a 10-year anniversary.
10-year anniversary.
I still got my first paddle.
Yeah.
Our dragon is missing. We want it back.
Right.
Arthur Roberts.
Thank you, Mike. I just wanted to say, before we meet next time, Seneca Falls will be celebrating convention days, Saturday, July 18th. That's the 167th anniversary of the first women's rights convention in the world. Mm-hmm. So I've been making kind of weekly trips up there. I'm now on the board of both the Hall of Fame and the Historical Park. And I am really, you know, it's only an hour up the road, guys. You know, you just go, get on 89 North, and it's easy and quick and gorgeous, a gorgeous ride. And Seneca Falls just has so much history, and July 18th is a wonderful day of events and procession and parade, and people dress up as Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who will be 200 as of in November, by the way. And so I'm going up there. Anybody else wants a ride? It's really a treat. There's the Hall of Fame and the Women's Rights Park, and they collaborate on these events, and I mean, any day of the week, it's a good trip, but especially on July 18th.
Anyone else? I would just speak for a moment and say the Civil War is over. You may not believe that by reading the news in South Carolina and other places, but 150 years ago, it ended in April, theoretically. And we've had a Civil War Commission going on for the last 4 or 5 years. Tomorrow night will be the last meeting of the Civil War Commission, official. We've still got a few things that we're working on, including the Civil War Nurses Memorial at TC3, and also a possible event for the rededication of the Civil War Monument in DeWitt Park. We recently installed a marker at the grave of Julia Cook, who was a Civil War nurse, and also Sophronia Buckland, who was also a Civil War nurse. It's been a fun ride. We haven't had a lot of money to work with. We know that, but we've done a lot of different things, involved a lot of different people, and certainly we need to thank all of our commissioners, and certainly I want to thank the co-chair, who's our county historian, Carol Kamen, whose idea it was to begin with, and who has shepherded this along the way. There will be a report in the end, saying all the things we have done, but I wanted to take a minute just to recognize that this commission has done a lot of good in a state that didn't bother to recognize the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. Local communities did spend some time doing that. Thanks. I don't have any other report tonight other than that. I do have a chair's appointment, and that is to the Workforce Development Board. I have Isla Burbank. Let's move to reports from our county administrator, county attorney, and finance director. Joe Mariana is our county administrator.
Thanks, Mike, and my report is very short tonight. Just a couple of items to remind you. We have a retreat scheduled on July 23rd at the Health Department. Our topic is going to be the climate survey and follow-up measures to that, so please try to attend that. Again, it's on the 23rd of July. My favorite topic that I always talk about, it seems like, when I'm here, which is the tax cap. I'll be really brief on this. The state did extend the cap for another 4 years. So that's going to be a part of our lives and situations for a while longer. To the extent that there's good news in this, the circuit breaker, which I talked to you earlier about, which was a source of real concern, has been modified to an extent that's important. It really will apply now to school districts. It is the old STAR program resurrected and rebate checks, and the limitations that apply to that circuit breaker will now relate to whether a school district has stayed within its tax cap, not us. So there will still be a soapbox sanction with respect to local governments who don't meet their tax cap. So if we don't, we still have to pass a waiver in the future to get past that. But in terms of a circuit breaker and allowing a circuit breaker credit to be given to an individual, it really is now a matter of whether the school district is tax cap compliant, not municipal governments. Last item on this diverse list, I know I've reported at committee meetings in the past, and I know we've issued a release, but I think it's important to draw attention to the fact that when you look over there and that see that AED sign on the wall, that's a really important step forward for this county. That sign is one of many in every county building that we own, in some county vehicles that we drive. We are now equipped with AEDs, with defibrillators, in all of our buildings and many of our pieces of equipment. And I want to give credit to a few people who have made it happen. Brenda Crosby especially was important to bring this project to completion, as was Lee Shurtleff, Beth Harrington, Arel Lamaro, Alan Lockett, and a number of staff people who have really gone to town to make this happen. I'm proud of the fact that we have a workforce that volunteered for training in how to use these devices. We have somewhere around 200 county employees. Of 711 employees, over 200 are trained in the use of these devices and in CPR. So I think that says a lot about this government. I think it says a great deal that we are among the first employers, I believe, in this area to fully equip our buildings with these devices. And as I said before, it's inevitable that there will come a day when we need to use one of these devices. And I think that will be our ultimate reward for the legislature stepping up to fund this project. The ultimate reward will be when we need these devices, they will be there for us. So I want to give credit to everybody who's been involved in this. And that's my report.
Tim Dennis.
Joe, is there a need for an executive session?
There is. I think Mike said something earlier about that. Yeah.
Sorry.
The question is for Joe. I want to do these reports, and then I'm going to move up some of the things on the agenda so we can let some of the staff and Dr. Hainsley. Jonathan Woodard is our county attorney.
Sure. Just briefly, since our last meeting, you probably heard the results of the jury trial in the case called Brown versus Hoffman, in which a plaintiff was alleging that a former deputy, now retired, used excessive force and unlawfully arrested her. The only thing I want to say is, obviously, the jury found for the deputy, and the evidence overwhelmingly supported the deputy and not the plaintiff. But the coverage seemed to focus mostly on the race of the people. But the jury focused on the evidence, and the evidence really just did not support the claim. It's fortunate that the jury reached the right decision. It seemed at the end of the evidence that was kind of an obvious thing that the jury would decide. But it is somewhat unfortunate that the coverage focuses more on the race than on the facts. And that's all I have to say about it.
Questions for John? Rick Snyder is our director of finance.
Yes, I'll try to keep it short tonight, even though we're going to look at 3 months of sales tax receipts. So if you look in your agenda, pages 4 through 7, we'll go through March's, April's, and May's. I'll go quite quickly. When we look at March, we're looking at a month where we were down 16.4%. If you go to that March second column, and this about halfway down, you can see the comparison from March 2014 to March 2015. And so as we spoke before, in January and February were dismal months. March rounded out the quarter with another dismal showing, being down about 16.4%. The next page will show you each year from 1997 through 2015, quarter by quarter. The latest quarter, the period, first period 2015, shows $13,388,000. Because this was a bad quarter, you'd have to go back about 3 or 4 years before you find a quarter that was a first quarter that was quite that bad, because we have more funds coming in the first period in 2012, 2013, 2014 than we did this year. But we knew that there would be a little bit of light coming as we come into the second quarter. And so if you look at the next page, we look at the April sales tax distribution summary. And in the midsection there for the county portion, you can see that April finally shows receipts coming in about 3.6. It says 3.55% increase over the previous April 2014. So this was the beginning of an uptick from the first quarter that was down. And then if you go to the final page or the next page, for the May sales tax distribution summary, you can see that that comparing May to May, we were up 4.6%. So we have 2 months now under our belt where we're actually higher when compared to last year. So as of the end of May, year-to-date tax distributions to the county's portion totaled $12,559,533. And that compares to $12,617,887 in 2014. This represents a decrease of $58,354 year over year, or 0.46% decrease. So although the first quarter was not so good, and Joe has looked at this quite a bit as we're beginning to put the next year's budget together, I am still holding fast to that. We need one more month. After we get June's activity, we'll have another second quarter to compare to last year, and that second quarter information should be in about 2 weeks. So hopefully in about that same amount of time, we'll be able to bring you another report to show you how the second quarter, the quarter ending in June 2015. And I would also caution that even though we are down by about 0.5% year over year, we are also comparing to 2014, which was the highest year for sales tax receipt on record for Tompkins. So our measuring stick, what we're comparing to in these reports, is compared to last year, which just happened to be our best year in sales tax collection ever. So it is quite a high standard there to compare to. So as we work through the numbers over the next couple of weeks, we hope to have a little bit more substantial information that will come to bear on preparation of the 2016 budget. And then the last page that I passed out to you, not part of your agenda, but I have a October 1st, 2014 foreclosure and auction report that I would like to give this tonight as a preliminary report. Normally, I wait until all the checks have cleared the bank before I make this report. That hasn't happened yet. We haven't had time to have all the checks clear the bank because I believe yesterday was the last day we were still receiving checks from the people who bought these properties. But I thought I'd give this preliminary report so you could see the status. There were well over 100 people who attended the June 22nd auction that was held at the Space at Green Star on West Buffalo Street in Ithaca. 16 foreclosed properties were sold. The original list that I brought to the legislature included 17 residential properties and 17 vacant or commercial properties for a total of 34 properties. So because of redemptions and installment agreements, we were able to narrow that 34 down to just 16 foreclosed properties that were sold at auction. The spreadsheet that I handed out shows a couple pieces of new information that was asked for. In the second and third column, it was requested that we show the new owner's name and whether the the property was owner-occupied or renter-occupied. So we supplied the information. When we have that information, we will supply it. We don't always know if they're renter or owner-occupied, but we did the best that we could in showing the new owner's name, that's the purchaser of the property, and whether it was land, owner-occupied, or renter-occupied. Most important pieces of information on this spreadsheet shows the gross sales in the first column. That's the purchase price, or actually it's the fourth column, but the first one with dollars in it is the purchase price column, and that's the gross proceeds that we get from the purchaser. That came in at $362,100. And I won't go through the entire spreadsheet for time, but the most important figure that I could point out to you, after we net out the auctioneer's fees, the payment of the taxes that were past due, the new taxes, the net proceeds is in the last column all the way over on your right where it says gain or loss, and it shows you how much the county gained or lost for the sale of each particular property. And the total net proceeds, at least at this point in time, is $209,644.57. This compares very favorably to the last 2 years, where our proceeds last year was $203,856. So it was even better than last year's, and it was a whole lot better than the net proceeds from 2013, where we achieved net proceeds of about $100,000. So this is pretty much in a nutshell the results of our auction about 2 weeks ago, and I probably won't be bringing this back again unless there are some changes to this report. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to entertain them.
Questions for Rick? Carol.
Yeah, I had a question about the sales tax. Refresh my memory as to when the holiday shopping season shows up in our reports. Do they show up in the last quarter of the year before or the first quarter
you mean the
figures that were way down?
The November and December receipts, when do those show up?
Yes.
Well, those will show up in the last quarter, the fourth quarter of the fiscal year, which are our best 2 months, November and December, and we get those reported. We get those monies about 2.5 weeks later after the end of the month, and then I report that to you within about a week or two after that. So November's proceeds to the state come to us, the county, for distribution in December, and I report them to you probably in late December.
Okay. I was just trying to understand the way in which our first quarter was so far down and whether that was any reflection of the prior holiday season. Okay, thank you. And then the on the foreclosure report, I assume the column that you've added that's owner-occupied was for the prior owner, not the new
owner. Correct, yeah.
Anything else? Dooley?
I just want to thank Rick for adding those extra columns. It made more work for you, but thank you very much.
Jim?
I want to thank Rick. It's nearly 0.5% on the... what are we at? 460 for 1% on the tax roll. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. Would you please move Resolution K for us?
I would.
Martha has a question for Rick.
Yeah, just I want to thank you, Rick, that there appears to be only one owner occupied property, and I know we're always happy to have receipts, but I'm also happy that it seems like there was a lot compared to the list you started with, that there were a lot of redemptions and people figured out ways to stay in their homes. Thank you.
Jim?
Item K, it is the adoption of the 2015-2016 operating budget, Tompkins-Cortland Community College.
Is there a second?
And I would move that.
Seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Discussion. Jim?
One comment. We had a short meeting over here prior to this resolution and moved it forward. Carl talked to us, talked here, and I think what's really important about this, that number one, I'm hoping that we will unanimously pass this, and then that news can be sent to Cortland County, who is going to be putting together another meeting in a couple of days to see if they can be a part of this year's 2015-2016 operating budget. They had voted against their portion a week or so ago, and I'm really hoping, and I know all of you are, certainly Carl, that they can see their way clear to match us on the 9th. And that's all I would say.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Dr. Haynes, for waiting for us tonight.
Thank you for your support.
I want to move down because I know somebody's going to pull some things on consent that there may be folks here from our staff that are here for. So let me just move down through. But before that, I want to go to Kathy Covert under reports from other county staff, and I'm going to recognize her to report on the search for the deputy clerk position for the legislature.
Thank you, Mike. Pursuant to the county charter, the appointment of a deputy clerk position requires confirmation by the legislature. After an extensive search by Michelle and I, we do believe we found a very good candidate, and I would like to put forward the recommendation of Katrina McCloy for your approval.
I think all of us have heard about this in advance. Is there a motion to approve this appointment? I have a motion by Jim Dennis, a second by Will Burbank. Discussion. Those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Kathy, for the work that you and Michelle did, I know, on the interview process and searching out a new candidate for us. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Don't think so. Let's do the consent agenda. We have some appointments. Out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, to the Environmental Management Council, Susan Riley. Out of Government Operations Committee, for the Public Information Advisory Board, Michael Katz. Resolution A, award of bid, bridge replacement.
Off.
Pulled. Out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution B, authorizing 2015 capital grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit. That's ID 5663. Out of the Government Operations Committee, Resolution C, establishing standard work days for elected and appointed officials of Tompkins County, ID 5677. And then there's Resolution D, authorization to execute quitclaim deed sale of foreclosure properties at public auction, ID 5686. Resolution E, authorization to execute quitclaim deed property redeemed before county auction, ID 5687. So we pulled one item. Can I have a motion on the consent agenda? Dooley Kiefer, and seconded by Martha Robertson. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. So let's go next to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna, if you will, can you, because we've got staff waiting, can we move Resolution A that was just pulled off consent?
Yes, award the bid to bridge replacement Groton City Road, bridge over Fall Creek, and that's document ID 5699. I shall move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Dooley Kiefer.
I asked to have it pulled off so I could vote no. I didn't want to vote against all the consent resolutions. And I'm voting no because the $1.1 million that this costs is, in my view, an excessive use of money for something that may not be the most crucial part of our infrastructure, which we really need to focus on. So thank you for letting me explain my no vote.
Carol Trock.
Are you done, Dylan?
That's enough.
I was just going to ask some questions. Is this the location in Groton where, first of all, we currently have that truss bridge?
Bailey Bridge.
Okay. My memory of that and our decision to put that in was that we were spending a fair amount of money to we got a good price on it, but it cost us a fair amount of money to put that in, and that we were going to go with that solution for a good many years, and that's why we spent that money. Is that the bridge we're talking about? Yes. Am I recalling the right bridge?
Jeff Smith, do you want to come up?
Yep.
Jeff Smith is our highway director.
Well, I just want to know if this is that's the bridge we're talking about. It's the one where we bought Tinker Toy bridge
temporary
pieces. For want of a better term, but you got to put together in pieces.
It's a Bailey Bridge. I also call it an erector set bridge.
That was what
it was. A single lane bridge with a load posting. When we put it in, was to use it. You can utilize it rather than having it sit in our yard. The decision was made to put it in there rather than sit in our yard. And it was never going to be a permanent installation.
Okay. And then is this the same location where there is another bridge within about a mile?
No.
2 miles
That's
down the road?
Location.
That's a different location. Okay, and do we have an immediate need to use the Bailey Bridge somewhere else?
No.
Okay, well, I don't support this either, because my understanding at the time we put it in was that spending that money was because we weren't going to do something more permanent within a reasonable amount of time. So with all the needs we've got, I just can't justify this money.
Jim Dennis?
I was on the F&I committee when we got the Bailey, and it was never stated that that was going to be a permanent structure, because the reason we bought it was that we could move it to different places as the need rose.
Peter Stein, then Leslin.
Yeah, I would like to have you explain once again, because I've forgotten. What was the advantage? Okay, we bought the Bailey Bridge in case there was some emergency or something like that that would necessitated using that. And there was a very good price, and so that's why we bought it. But what was the logic that actually put it in use at that point? It turns out there's a fair amount of money involved in putting it, installing it, and then deinstalling it, right?
The cost of installing it would be the rental of a crane and the man hours. All the material that was into the bridge will be pulled out of there and be able to reused at another location. You can take the bridge apart, put it on a trailer and move it and then re-erect it and then take a crane, which the county doesn't have. We would rent a crane and we'd set it back in place.
But didn't we have to build the, I forget what they're called, the
abutments.
Yeah, those were made so that they could be relocated and reused.
Okay, thank you.
Leslie?
I just wanted to echo Jim's comments as well, that at no point, though I recall in F&I, that we said this was going to be permanent use bridge. As a matter of fact, I do recall that when I was no longer in the legislature, that I would be able to use that bridge. There would be no conflict of interest. I was fascinated that we bought a bridge.
Carol?
Yeah, I just don't want to be mischaracterized as having said that it was going to be permanent. I never thought it was going to be permanent. I'm not as old as some of you guys, although I'm getting up there, and I haven't been on the legislature that long, but my understanding at the time was that it was going to be for longer than this. As I recall, the purchase price of the bridge was about $50,000, give or take.
I don't remember.
And the installation price was about $200,000.
I really don't remember.
So, $250,000, to me, we should have gotten more life out of it. So that's my reason.
The purchase price is going to be reused everywhere else that we reuse it. We're not losing that. It's an investment.
We've got Dan, then Dave.
Jeff, can you talk about the cost of this bridge related to the amount that was originally budgeted for it?
The resolution that you have in front of you that is proposed talks about the low bidder. The total cost of the bridge is $426,892. That is the construction of the new bridge. The budget number that you heard referred to earlier was $1,100,000. So we're less than half of that budgeted number. The total cost of the bridge, again, to the low bidder, is $426,892.
Dave?
As I recall, when we put that bridge in, we didn't have a budget to rebuild the bridge at the time, but this was available, and it was relatively inexpensive, and that's why we chose to go that direction. And it was, in all cases, a temporary setup until we could get one into the budget that get the money to rebuild it.
If I could speak for a minute, I feel an undercurrent here about bridges. Bridges are expensive, there's no question. We have about 100 of them. When I first came on the legislature back in the 90s, we had 6 of them closed. And we worked very hard to get those opened. And most of them were reopened. But in the meantime, of course, wear and tear happens on bridges. Some of the older bridges have deteriorated. I think it's important to our road system to maintain our bridges and replace them on a regular schedule. I don't think we should simply say, well, it's only used by a few people in that neighborhood, so why bother to put the bridge back? Bridges are important, and I fully support this resolution to rebuild the Groton City Bridge. Anyone else? Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. All those opposed? We have 2 opposed. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Let me just pick up. Kevin's here for what?
Jeff.
Jim, can we go back to budget and do J?
Absolutely, Mike.
Many people. How about that? That's the adoption of the local law.
Oh, yes. Okay, here we go. Adoption of local law number blank of 2015, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2016, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion?
My only comment, there were 3 members of the committee there, and Mike came in a little bit later. Clearly, this is something we've done for the last 3 or 4 years prior to even the budget submission from the county administrator to us, and it does not necessarily mean that we're going to be anywhere. We have the county administrator building a budget at a number that we've already previously talked about. It gives us the opportunity, in case we do go over, that we can, and we don't have to make that part of the budget process. I think I've said it 4 years in a row. It's a safeguard for us. And if we get in under the cap, we will repeal it and play the game the way it's supposed to be played with New York State.
Okay, any other comments? Peter Stein.
Well, it's good to have some consistency because for 4 years now I voted against this. The reason that I vote against it is that I think it sends the wrong message to our constituents that someone might think that we're too enthusiastic about overriding the tax cap. And I never have seen the logic for doing that, that we can't wait till the end and decide what to do at that point. So for that reason, I'll vote against it.
Anyone else? On the resolution adopting the local law overriding the tax levy limit, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I have 1, 2, 3 opposed. I think we've got a couple of resolutions out of government operations, H and I. Can we go to those, please, Dooley, or Dave, Dan?
Dooley, Dan, Dave, any of those.
Too many DKs here.
Thank you. Okay, I move Resolution H, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to Resolution Number 5707 of 2015, authorizing an agreement with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services for transfers of Cook Street parcel.
Is there a second for that? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Discussion? Carol Chalk.
Well, as I usually do, although my husband's salary is not impacted by a particular purchase by Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, I will ask permission of my peers to recuse myself from this vote.
You may recuse yourself. Anybody else want to speak on this? I'm ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Abstention? That's unanimous, except one abstention.
I don't know what Ed's here for. Is it for this?
I think okay. It's this thing. That's what I was moving it up again for. Is there a motion? Can you move I for us, please, Dan?
Yeah, I'm going to ask Dave McKenna to move I, please.
Okay, I is document ID 5707, authorizing an agreement with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services for transfer of the Cook Street parcel.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion. Dan?
Thank you. I asked Dave to move it so that I could make some amendments, which were just handed to me very recently from Planning Department. They're very minor, but I hope you'll consider them. So the first part of the amendment would be for the first resolved. The word transferred would be changed to sold. And then immediately following that, the word in would be changed for payment in. So these, it's really not a substantive change, in my opinion. The other change...
Would you just read that?
Sure. So this is the first resolved. So the way it would sound now, is that what you're asking, Dooley?
Yes.
So the way it would read now is resolved on recommendation of the Government Operations Committee that the Village of Freeville tax parcel 4.5, et cetera, be sold to INHS to INHS for payment in the amount of $7,320.
Are those friendly?
I'm sorry, there's one more change. May I?
That's go ahead, Dan.
The other change that was requested to be made is on the second to last resolved. The request is to add the words to effectuate this sale at the end of that phrase. So it would read, resolve further that the county administrator or his designee be authorized to execute an agreement with INHS to effectuate this sale.
Are those friendly to Dave? Is it friendly to you?
Yes.
Is it friendly to the seconder? I think it was Glenn.
Yes.
Okay, those are accepted. Discussion, Dooley.
There was another small change I would like to offer for the next to the last resolve that you were just talking about, so that it says that the county administrator or his designee be and hereby is authorized to effectuate.
Is that friendly?
Friendly.
Yes, is it friendly, the seconder? Okay, so that's been accepted. Jim Dennis.
Is this that piece of land over by the waterfalls that now can no longer be developed into a six-story apartment building?
No, this is in the village of Freeville. It's a vacant lot. It's next to an INH housing project, and this hopefully someday in the future will be added to that project. And the village of Freeville council, whatever they're called, has gone along with this.
So Carol, was your hand up?
Yeah, I'll just give the same explanation. Well, it's very frustrating to me, having advocated for affordable housing in this community before Paul lived here. I will recuse myself from this one as well.
All right. Ready to vote? With those changes and as amended, all in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed, one abstention. Have we got everybody that's been waiting? All right, let's take a 10-minute break. Come back at certainly by 5 of, and then we'll go through the reports. Welcome back. Let's go to committee reports. Let's start right at the top. Let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Mr. Chair, I just want to reiterate the department head's legislature retreat at 5:30. The county administrator already said it, so please mark your calendars and show us that you're there. That is it for my report.
Questions for Leslie? Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yes, well, I'm a little embarrassed to say that I was not there to chair that meeting. I had a prior commitment, and Carol Chopp chaired that meeting, and would it be okay to ask her to report on it? And
I'd be happy to have Carol report.
Thank you. I would appreciate that, Carol.
No, I'm happy to do it. It was not that long a meeting. We had a, in addition to the resolutions that will come to you, and Peter, I'll do those or let you do them, we had a report from the planner from CARS, the Alcohol and Drug Council, Angela, whose name I can't read my writing, Solomon? Sullivan or Solomon?
Sullivan.
Okay, Sullivan, about this year's annual comparison of local youth regarding their perception of and exposure to notions of drug abuse. And she distributed that, and I'm sure that it would be available if others wanted to see it. And we had a presentation by Karen Baer. She was mostly there to answer questions. She did not do a long presentation about this analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. And this I do encourage people to look at. She was going to make a copy available to sit in the legislature office. Committee members got copies. They were down to their last 10 paper copies, the run, and I think that they were going to send around the link. Basically is a condition of receiving certain types of state and federal housing dollars. Jurisdictions that do they're required to certify to HUD that they will affirmatively further fair housing. And then further, those that are entitlement communities, which the city of Ithaca is, but Tompkins County isn't, they're required to conduct an analysis to identify impediments to that fair housing choice within the jurisdiction, take appropriate actions to overcome the effects of impediments identified through the analysis, and maintain records reflecting that analysis. And so that's what this report is primarily, although she also took advantage of the opportunity to look at, for some of it, at the county as a whole. And there's an executive summary that identifies the top 10, is it? About nine impediments. And that part of it is only a few pages long. Maybe that portion of it could be sent to legislators. It is interesting. It's things like the levels of discrimination in housing accommodation, the needs of, she looked at the needs of English limited, that people are looking for housing, subrecipients of certain kinds of funds, exclusionary tactics, other kinds of practices, and age-related discrimination about intended to screen out families with children. We spent some time talking about. So that was very interesting. That's basically what we did. There were two resolutions, which are in the packet. Do you want to do those, Peter?
It's fine.
There's one of them's got what came out of committee has a different title than what went in. It's in your packets.
Okay, why don't you do them, Carol?
Let's take Resolution F, please.
Resolution F is...
Appropriation from contingent.
Packet 18. Packet page 18. This is an appropriation for the contingent fund, terminal pay, health department. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer. This takes a short form roll call. Ready to vote? I'll go ahead and read the roll.
Mr. Shinagawa? Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Are there any of you that want to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
And
G.
Resolution G is the one that's in your packets, revised as adopted by the HHS committee on 7/2/15, budget adjustment, Ebola preparedness and response planning for the health department.
Is there a second? Mm-hmm. Peter Stein. Discussion? Julie?
Since I'm totally unfamiliar with this, is this a new hire?
No. Oh, sorry, Carol. Go ahead.
We have been conducting this program. I'm refreshing my memory here. We've been conducting this program for a number of years. And... it's a renewal. Is that correct?
Well, I think the project assistant is on board now. It was kind of in anticipation of this grant money. So in a way, it's a new position. In a way, it's not a new position. But it is a project assistant, so it's a temporary position that we're adding with this grant money.
Can I just add just a little clarification to that? So you're right, Joe, the project assistant has been on board working on another project that had some grant funding attached to it. This is going to extend what the person has been doing so that, you know, they can stay on longer to work on this as well, because this is new grant monies coming in for this particular part of it.
And I was curious how many hours a week this is.
Is it 35?
It probably is 35. Most of the health department is 35. I'm assuming it's consistent with that.
Yes, it's 35.
So this is this person's full-time responsibility now.
Along with other things, but yes.
Okay.
I can also, if you don't mind, I'll add that the committee discussion focused around whether the funding is limited specifically for Ebola, given the similar concerns about other possible communicable diseases. And the answer was that the kinds of preparation, planning and preparation that's done would apply in any such situation, but that the funding is specifically made available in response to the to what had happened with Ebola. But certainly in our county and elsewhere, it would be, you know, what you do in one form of contagion would apply in others.
Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the revised resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That is unanimous. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Peter. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
F&I has not met since our last meeting. We will meet again on Monday, July 13th, 3:30 in these chambers.
Question?
My report.
Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thanks, Mike. We met yesterday and heard from Ed Marks and Tom Knipe about consolidated funding applications that are going into the regional council process. Also, Ken Schlatter had a couple of comments on that.
Let's not have sidebar comments. Let's go on.
We had a review of the tourism program budget, preliminary budget for 2016, and we have, gave Tom and Sue Pearl got some feedback on that, and that will come back to the committee next month for a vote. And there was conversation about the report from Martha Armstrong about the Energy and Economic Development Task Force. The TCAD is running with the support of the county, and they met once. They met last week, and another meeting, next meeting is set up, is being set up for August. And just, I know that the membership is of interest to folks, and I think, I'm not sure if it's on our website or TCAD's website yet or anything, but if it's okay, I'll take a minute and read the names, just the people are interested. Charlie Troutman, director of the Science Center, is chairing it. Chairing the task force, Bert Bland from Cornell, Glenn Morey, Groton legislator, Graham Gillespie, president of Holt Architects, Herman Sieverding of Integrated Acquisition and Development, Irene Weiser from Town of Caroline Board, Jennifer Tavares, president of the Chamber of Commerce, Jerry Goodnow from Upstate Power Producers, the power plant on the lake, Ken Schlatter from Cooperative Extension, myself, Melissa Kemp, director of Solar Tompkins and working with Renovus Energy, Mike Cannon from the Trust Company, Chair Lane, Peter Bardaglio from the Black Oak Wind Farm and Tickpea, and Steve Williver from Williver Construction. Ed Marks and Michael Stamm are ex officio members, and I'm afraid we're going to bore staff. Ina Arthur, Joe Mariana, Katie Borghella, and Martha Armstrong will all be sort of staffing the committee, so the task force. So.
Thank you. Questions for Martha?
Next meeting is, I don't know, in August sometime, but the September meeting we're going to have to change, so members should, heads up, it's set right now for Labor Day. I don't think that's really a good idea. So we'll send out a doodle poll and let people know when that'll be.
Let's go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Thank you. PEAK met the day after our last legislative meeting. And, we had one resolution, which you passed tonight, which was nice. We heard from Mike Thorne, who's the superintendent of public works in the city, updating us on the Cayuga Inlet dredging project, which was fascinating. He talked about how the project has morphed over time. The cost has gone way up. The presence of hydrilla has made it more challenging. And what they've zeroed in on using is geotubes, which will hold lots of sediment with their tubers in, and slowly this soil with hydrilla in it will dewater in place. presumably somewhere down near Southwest Park. The design of stacking these geotubes is not, there's a lot that's not finalized, but that's the approach that they're taking. Originally, it sounded as though the state was thinking they would just start dredging at the beginning of the inlet and just go as far as they could. But in conversation with Mike and others in the city, they're going to dredge a shallow amount out of the whole of the inlet that they're focusing on, which makes more sense in terms of helping navigation. It's not at all clear that this has much to do with flooding, except in some very specific areas. So it was fascinating to hear from him. We had, as always, a detailed presentation from the planning commissioner. We spoke about various energy items. And this meeting, he also discussed the Trails Initiative, which we had encouraged planning department to get involved in, and the Black Diamond Trail, the Jennings Pond Project, and the East Hill Recreation Way all seem to be showing signs of life and moving forward, which is really good. I won't mention any more things about energy. We heard again in detail from Monica Roth about the ag and farmland plan, and I'm glad that it had a good public hearing tonight, hearing Monica again. We heard from Scott Doyle on the Stream Corridor Restoration and Flood Hazard Mitigation Program update, which is also has been very important to our county to help control bridge undermining and sediment deposition in the lake. The South Street Extension Project has advanced far enough that it should be coming to F&I, and I don't know if it's gotten there yet, has it? No. Well, we'll be curious to hear how that turns out. The other thing that we discussed in a very preliminary way was a resolution sent to us from Schoharie County encouraging DEC to institute a freeze on new air and water quality permits for all natural gas infrastructure. And that was based on resolutions taken by the New York State Medical Society and the National AMA. Many problems were seen immediately with the resolution. We now have copies of the New York Medical Society's resolution, and we have and of the AMA's resolution. So this will come back to us for discussion at some point. It's not clear to me that there's an urgency to deal with it right away, but we have more information, so it will come back at some point. Our next planning committee meeting is Wednesday a week. A week from tomorrow.
Questions for Dewey?
Whatever that date is, thank you. July 15th.
Carol?
The dredging, if I'm recalling correctly, it's 1 to 2 feet that will be
the depth
instead of the 4 to 5 that they found is the actual depth of the sediment, and that. So it's less than a third, and it's in square feet or cubic feet of material. It's less than a third of the material is going to be removed, and that it's then only a portion of the necessary project that it's going to, the material will then be put in big tubes called geotubes, which will sit down Route 13 somewhere. Be large and noticeable with no permanent plan to then, after those off-water, which is what you put them in the tubes for, to do anything with the sediment.
afterwards. So it really only, it gets us less than a third of the way on the project, and then only a portion of the way on the totality of the project. Do we have any idea what the city's response to this is, given that this was really originally the Army Corps of Engineers' responsibility?
No, it wasn't. It isn't. It was DEC's
responsibility.
And the city's
and
responsibility.
Not ours.
Not the county's.
No, not the city's either.
City had a portion of responsibility also. But DEC and the Canal Corporation are the main players who let the years go by without doing it.
And should we be weighing in on this? It's not a whole solution.
I think they're aware of that. I think Mike Thorne is well aware of the shortcomings of the plan.
So I was surprised to hear that we weren't being urged to weigh in, and so I'm just wondering if there's any sentiment in that direction.
Jim,
excuse me, but why is this back and forth going on?
There was a question.
I mean, it's really out of order from my point of view.
Do you have a question, John, or Jim?
That's my question. Why is this
I'd
back
like
and
to know if there's
order?
Any...
You have the floor now, Jim.
...on the body to do weigh in.
Let's... are we ready to move on? Julie, are you done?
I'm done, yes.
Thank you. Charter Review Committee, we met on July 1st, and we looked again at the workforce development section. We reviewed some proposed changes of that and went through that section and made quite a number of changes there. And we also went through the assigned council part of the charter. We've basically gone through just about all of the departments and agencies that we were supposed to in the charter. We're going to be revisiting some of the things which we didn't come to total conclusion about. We'll be looking at some more possible larger changes and whether or not we should be talking about them and bringing them forward or not. But it's 18 months later, we've been working on this thing, and thanks to Kathy Covert and others who, all of our department heads, all of our department heads and other staff members who have helped us along so far. We're really trying to get this done by the end of the year. Any questions? I skipped GO. Kathy just gave me an elbow here, basically. I'm sorry, Dan.
It's okay. It's one of those DK things again.
I guess. That's right. Dan Klein is the chair of government operations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a meeting on June 23rd. We heard a report from Rod Howe, the director of the History Center. He's only been the head of the History Center for a couple of months. He told us about a lot of the different programming going on there that's been going on and that ideas he has to keep things moving along. And we also spent some time talking about a decision point that they have coming up, which is that the rent on the space that they're using is scheduled to double in January 2019. So they're looking at all creative possibilities, including staying there, but also what might happen if they went somewhere else, who they might work with to share space, all kinds of stuff's on the table. And they feel like they have to make a decision probably in 2016. It might take up to 2 years to move. We got an introduction to Office 365, which I have to read this, which is a cloud-based email, file sharing, and online meeting subscription service that works across various devices. County Information Technology is wanting us, the whole county, to move towards this system. So this was just an introduction. It's going to cost money at some point to make that switch over, so we're going to be hearing a lot more about this not too far down the line. And the last thing in my report is Dooley Kiefer brought to our attention a resolution that Rockland County passed regulating the activity of drones. And she would like us to consider such a law here, so it's probably going to be on our next agenda, which is on Tuesday, July 28th at 3:30.
Questions for Dan? Mike Sigler.
The drone thing you were just talking about, it's that is going to the committee then?
Dooley, you want to answer these questions?
What was your question? I'm sorry.
The drone?
As a topic.
Okay.
Yeah. Rockland County's came into being because their sheriff was very concerned about having drones hover around his public safety facilities, and it grew from there. And we should discuss it too.
Thanks. Carol? Then Mark?
It's a history center. How much notice were they given about their rent? Is there a reason that it's going to double? And are they... refresh my memory as to whether there may be part of the discussion about what might eventually go in at Stewart Park.
So to answer your last question first, all options are on the table. I have not heard the Stewart Park one, but they might be talking about that. They are far from making a decision. They were given a lot of notice. It's like, again, it's January 2019 that the rent will increase, and so they've already known about it for some amount of time. Was there another part to your question there?
Why?
Oh, why? Right. It was. I think it was like a 10-year lease that they had signed.
It was a 20-year.
20-year lease. Okay. So they're just in the last 3.5 years now. So that's what's going on.
Thank you.
Carol? No, I'm sorry, Martha. Hit Carol.
I think it's been for 20 years way under market for the rent that they've been paying. And I'm going to try to have a sense of humor here. When I first came into the legislature, the deputy county administrator sat down with me and she, sort of an introduction of things. She said, well, you know, we've got this old library and I think it's, you know, we're using it for records and the DeWitt, you know, DeWitt Historical is going to have to move. And I think that'd be a great place for the DeWitt mm-hmm. Historical Society. The library. Just saying.
Anyone else? Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
I have no report except that we have our September-October expanded Budget Committee calendar out, and I believe it got emailed to you all today. And there we go. We'll be getting the budget from the county administrator September 1, right, Joe? Okay. And other than that, I have no report. And thank you for supporting all of you, Tompkins Community College.
It's Cortland Community College.
Take their name off.
Well.
So Jim, can you remind us what needs to happen forward in terms of the decision on TC3 relative to what Cortland does?
Well, you know, I asked our county attorney and we asked Carl at the meeting, and what Carl said at the meeting, if they turn it down, then the process starts all over again. We would probably have to go over there and meet with their budget committee, we being Mike, Joe, and myself. The last time we were all over there, their budget chair is Kevin Whitney. And, you know, it would be one more round of negotiations, and basically they would have to start over again. Because Carl needs a budget. He needs a budget approval by all the partners. Is there more?
No, there's a drop-dead date. It's in mid-August, I think, so it can't go forever. They have to submit their budget to SUNY to get chargebacks in place and all that. So it can't linger indefinitely. And Jim otherwise explained exactly what we heard from Carl.
Thank you.
I've got Dooley, then Peter.
I thought the state would send mediators to help this process.
I didn't hear that in no. Carl's explanation. It could be, but I didn't hear Carl explain it.
I had
it
heard that during trustee meetings at the college, and that has happened a couple of times. There are four community colleges across the state that have joint county sponsorship, and this issue has come up before, never in Tompkins and Cortland counties, but in some of the other places, and that's one of the things that happened one time or another with those other colleges is that mediators
mediators were sent down by the state. Peter?
Right. So just so that I understand it, it is true that in the end they must come to the same number. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. And so is there any provision for what happens if they can't? Or is it just assumed that they will?
I think we need to assume that they will. Otherwise, I suppose, zero becomes the fallback position, right, which is not a good idea.
Okay.
Anyone else? Thank you, Jim. Well, Library Committee, no report, except that, as I said before, we will meet on Friday at 9 a.m. Public Safety Committee, Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee meeting will be on the 20th of this month, and our main topic of discussion is to go over the body camera policy. That body camera policy should have been sent to everybody that's on the committee, and also I submitted it to local media, including the Ithaca Times, the Ithaca Journal, and the Ithaca Voice the day of our last public safety meeting, so they should all have copies of it too. We're just going to focus most of our meeting on that particular discussion.
Questions? Thank you, Nathan. Minutes of the previous meeting, June 16th, 2015. Someone want to move them? Peter Stein, seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion? Julie Kiefer.
Staff was kind enough to distribute in your red folders suggested additions to the minutes, which I'd like to move.
A motion for amendments to the minutes. Is there a second? Carol Chalk. You want to discuss them, Dooley?
Yes, I'll read through them. On page 36 of the packet, the third paragraph, last line, this is the referral from Dan Hoffman that our seeker designation might be problematic. What I added was, action listed on the resolution is type 2-20, routine agency management and administration, and suggested it be reviewed. So it was explaining what he said.
Are you finished, Julie?
No, I saw Martha's hand.
No, I'm
well,
I'm,
you finished,
I'm
Julie,
line.
Then I'll catch Martha.
And on the same page, the sixth paragraph, which is the Eric Clay paragraph, he said something that was really memorable, and I thought it should be in the minutes. He said, the number of commuters calling us a gated community. And I thought that was a memorable phrase, which could well be in the minutes. On page 38, first paragraph, this is about Don Harris, who was part of the Travis Hyde team. And in characterizing him, it didn't include his professional credentials. He's a PE with Delta Engineering, which I thought should be in the minutes. And what he explained about was the combined heat and power system with natural gas. So I thought a bit more information was appropriate to include in the minutes. And on page 40, in the sixth entire paragraph, which is Faye Gugakis addressing us, it's spelled as distractive driving, and I think she said distracted driving. And she specifically alluded to the tearing down of the Women's Community Building as a bad thing, just as moving our library she thought was a bad thing. So I thought it was reasonable to include her point. But those are the four changes I propose. I checked the Delta Engineering one with Graham during break to make sure that was accurate.
Martha?
I don't think this is what we should be doing. This is exactly what Kathy used to complain about putting words in other people's mouths. I think this is the wrong thing to do.
Jim Dennis? Jim?
No, I'm sorry. I agree with...
All right, then we go Carol, then to Peter. Carol?
Yeah, well, I seconded this because I couldn't recall what seeker-type action Dan Hoffman had suggested that we needed to do, and since that turned out to be relevant enough for our old library committee to be meeting and our attorney to be have weighed in that we should change that, I thought I was glad to have it in here so that I could look it up. And I do know that happen to know that the term that is distracted driving, I don't care about the other two, but just on the type 2-20, I thought should be in here, and that's why I seconded it. And I would support it unless somebody from our staff feels that those are inaccurate changes, in which case I'd separate out. Certainly, the first one I think ought to be in there.
Peter Stein.
Yeah. I agree with Martha. I think this is a bad mistake. We spent a long time developing a minute policy based on the fact that people were unhappy with the amount of time that we spent at these meetings around the table arguing about this. And I think we've stuck to that policy for a couple of years now, and I think it's the right thing to do, and I will vote against it.
Any other comments on the amendment? Carol?
I'd just like to move to separate then that first comment about the type 2-20. I think that's important to put in here.
Is there a second? It's been seconded by Will, the motion to separate the amendment. So now we're going to talk about, we'll vote on whether to separate or not. Those in favor of separating, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? Rest of us, I guess. That fails, so it'll be voted on in one unit. On the amendment, Dooley's amendment, which is the four changes, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 2, those opposed? The rest of them? Now we're back to the minutes. Are we ready to vote on the minutes? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Those opposed? 2 opposed. I'm sorry, who's opposed again, please? 2 opposed. Thank you. Any unfinished business? All right, we need to get a motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel, a particular person. And moved by Jim Dennis. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. We don't expect to come out of executive session except to adjourn. We don't expect to take any action after this. So all in favor of the executive session, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, we're into executive session.